From the West Australian, I'm Ben O'Shea and this is The West Live.
The West Live.
The West Live
with Ben O'Shea.
As you've heard by now, the fuel excise tax cuts will expire tomorrow, and if you haven't already filled up your petrol tank, you could be in for a shock. One major fuel chain in Perth has increased its prices by a whopping 44 cents a litre, and that was before the tax cut was even removed. Just as an FYI, the tax cut equated to basically saving motorists about 22 cents a litre. So this fuel chain increased its prices by roughly double what the tax cut was supposed to reduce it by. Now, Fuel Watch says this isn't a sign that fuel companies are price gouging. And if you believe that, I can give you a great price on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers has already fired a warning shot at petrol companies, saying that he expects them not to raise prices too much. His argument is that the petrol companies are sitting on more than 700 million litres of lower excise fuel, so they should keep prices low until that's all gone. Jim. I love the optimism, buddy, but all of us in the real world know that petrol companies don't give a rat's clacker about what you'd like them to do. We've seen over and over again that fuel companies take a long time to pass on discounts, but are faster than Usain Bolt when it comes to passing on a price hike. That actually gives me an idea. If only there was some way to stage a race between petrol companies passing on price hikes and banks passing on rate hikes. You know what? It'd probably end in a draw because both are as bad as each other. And what it means is that we, as the consumer, end up paying the price, quite literally. And with cost of living pressures getting out of control, the last thing Aussie families need is having to pay another 15 to 20 bucks at the petrol bowser. That's why Jim Chalmers and Albo had their work cut out for them when they hand down their first budget next month. Fixing the budget and helping Aussies make ends meet is a pretty tall order. Coming up on the show, why the future of going to see your local GP is in doubt, and a bold plan from the McGowan government to crack down on violence in our nightlife precincts. But first, let's see what's making news.
The West Live. Making news.
Joining me now in the studio is Sunrise correspondent Matt Tinney. G'day, mate.
G'day, mate. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day to you too.
I had to think about that.
Do you know what? I can tell you're obsessed.
It's my Friday.
You're obsessed with Daniel Ricciardo, aren't you? We haven't talked about this on the show so far this week.
Oh, but we talked about it when you were away. Team last week.
Yeah, because
yes.
You did. I saw on social media you did your little digital thing
hung upside down
with him. Yeah. You guys looked very chummy.
It was so much fun. Well, we're both from Italian backgrounds. His parents half Sicilian, half Calabrian. My family's from Sicily, so you know, there's a few similarities there. He obviously drives a lot better than I do.
To be fair, you have to do your driving at like 2 o'clock in the morning on the way to work.
Yeah,
his driving.
That's why they get me to do that shift, because there's no one on the road. Except you do see, as the months get warmer, I see some crazy stuff on the way to work, and it's only a very short trip. Yeah. But lots of people up and about walking and jogging like at ridiculous times of the morning.
Maybe they're like night shift workers or
three
something.
Three in the morning. Like, you couldn't pay me to jog at that time. There was only that one time when I ran out of fuel halfway around the lake and then had to run back to the servo and then run to my car and dash into work.
I don't think that's ever happened to Daniel Ricciardo at Monza.
No, I don't think so. Well, he's got a team. I didn't have a team helping me out.
Is he hanging around town?
Yeah, and then competing in the Singapore Grand Prix.
Oh, nice.
So, and then obviously limbo as to whether he'll have a seat next year after McLaren terminated the contract. Mm. So he may sit it out for a year and then hope to score a seat in 2024.
That's tough. Anyway, but I hope he's enjoying his time in Perth.
Oh, it looks like he's enjoying it.
And now one of my favourite phrases is, she'll be apples, mate. and she'll be apples all over the road after rollover today.
No, I had to resist the urge on Sunrise this morning of making any apple jokes or anything, because the truck driver's in a serious...
Oh, no.
But stable condition. So what's happened is this truck has rolled on the Kwinana Freeway at Bertram, losing its load of apples. It's just like, all you could see were apples. I looked at the vision this morning, I was like, what are they? Apples.
Yep. Do we know what sort
Everywhere.
Of apples?
They looked red to me. They're red
really
apples,
rule
but
it out.
Well, they're red delicious.
Red delicious, okay.
Oh, how many different types of apples can you name?
So there are Bravo, Royal Gala. Pink Lady.
So
these ones,
they look very red.
Let me have a look.
They look like a red delicious.
Yeah, they do. Raw galas.
Oh, maybe they're, do you reckon they're raw gala?
Raw galas. It's quite a deep red, but not quite Bravo.
Do we have red delicious here? I'm just wondering if that's like an East Coast thing that I've
I don't even know if that
up.
Is an apple.
Yeah, it is an apple. Is it sure? As a kid, I had red delicious, but I don't
golden
think we have
delicious.
Them here.
Do you remember golden delicious?
Oh, they're those apples that are like...
Sort of yellow?
Why would you bother?
Sort
they're
of
those
a
apples.
Soft.
My mum used to put those in my lunch.
Comeback.
Why do I want those?
You know, you can they were horrible.
They're horrible.
You can buy them.
I want a real crunch. I want the...
You can buy a golden delicious at Herdsman Fresh Market.
Ching, everyone.
So there you go. So
how much are they today?
Oh, they're not that cheap. I think they're like $9.99 a kilo or something like
that. Speaking of which, Herdsman have some great stuff, don't they?
They do.
Like, but you get four items and it's like
you pay for
$79.92.
You pay for
and it's like, whoa.
Do you have a favourite apple?
I like the red delicious ones, which obviously I'm... Not getting
you can't even
here.
Get here. Bravo.
No,
I love the Bravo.
The thing about the Red Delicious is they have this, they have a sweet flavouring, but they have a full bodied, I would think.
Yeah. They've got some acidity as well.
I don't know, there's something to it, but maybe it's harking back to childhood memories of having
it. You taste
them in
it now,
lunchbox.
They're probably gross.
Mel's, are you looking up Red Delicious, Mel? Can you show Ben, just so he can compare the Red Delicious to the apples that are strewn
going
all
on
over
today.
The freeway.
You know, we invented the Bravo apple here in Western Australia.
So, no,
we might
amazing.
Have even invented the Pink Lady. Oh, yeah.
The Red Delicious is like your quintessential apple.
Do you know what? I think we call that a Royal Gala here.
But they taste different. I've had Royal Galas, yeah. The Red Delicious has a different taste.
Here's an apple that I used to eat a lot as a kid.
How
so
if
much,
we transition
so much,
from a bloke who's in a serious
and
stable
we hope that guy
condition.
Is okay.
We
hope
do.
The truck
we
driver
hope he's
is okay. But
meanwhile,
we are talking
please enjoy our
some
review
more apple
of different
content.
Apples.
Here's an apple that I used to eat a lot as a kid that I don't at all. I haven't had one of these apples for a long time. Mm. Granny Smith.
Oh, yeah, Granny Smith, the green ones.
So you're making, Granny Smiths every
now
and then.
Yeah, and Granny Smith are the ones you stew.
Yeah, they're good for pies and things like that. Great for baking.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the last time I ate a Granny
neither
Smith.
Neither can I, actually. They're very acidic.
Yeah, I used to love them, but I might get onto a Granny Smith.
Do you know what? I haven't had enough apples in my life recently. That's what this
they
discussion
is. A good apple is delicious. It keeps the doctor
it's
away.
It's red delicious, even.
Yeah, we're going to find out. Maybe we're talking to the Royal Australian College of GPs a bit later on about the GP crisis. Maybe
apple
I'll ask
a day
them.
Keeps the doctor away.
Is any truth? Probably not. We've got serious things to talk about. And now let's talk about talking about serious things. Let's talk about this Optus hacking incident that happened last week. We talked about it on the show. I wasn't here, but my fill-in host, Tim Clark, discussed it. Nearly 10 million customers had their personal data stolen in the breach. We're talking Medicare numbers. We're talking passport details, driver's license numbers. So really, really quite extraordinary. One of the worst examples of a data breach in Australian history. The way Optus handled it wasn't that amazing. Then it took a new twist this week when the hacker came out and said, you know what, you're giving me another $1 million, just like Dr. Evil.
$1 million.
Or I'm going to release some information, 10,000 personal records a day for 7 days. But then the FBI and the Federal Police of Australia got involved. And look, it's fair to say the hacker has changed his tune.
Yes. So now the hackers claiming to be responsible for this breach have scrapped their ransom demand and they say they have deleted the almost 10 million customer records that they got from the telco's website. So they've actually released a message. There's a lot of typos in here, but I'll try to read it for you. It says... Too many eyes. We will not sell data to anyone. Personally deleted data from drive. Only copy. Sorry to, and it's TOO, 10,200 Australians whose data was leaked. Deepest apology to Optus for this. Hope all goes well. Optus, if you're reading, we would have reported exploit if you had method to contact. Ransom not paid, but we don't care anymore. Was mistake to publish data in first place. It just goes to show, you know, how many times do you get these fraudulent emails that have terrible spelling?
Yeah, yeah.
Are hackers just bad spellers? Is this like, can we deduce who is potentially going to be a hacker by the bad spelling? It's interesting. I mean, this is a terrible situation. I know there's state governments around the country now who are going to be swapping license numbers for people at Optus's cost. It's interesting that the federal government said it had warned Optus to tighten its cybersecurity. And Optus sort of classed it as a sophisticated hack. And then you've got the government and experts in the field saying, no, actually, what it's equivalent to is Optus left the window open and someone put their hand in and got an incredible amount of data.
Yeah, well, and looking at this hacker now, assuming that this is the actual hacker, doesn't really strike me as a very sophisticated character.
No, not if
you know
that
what I mean. Like it sounds like he's almost accidentally hacked into Optus and then tried to make some money out of it, realized that wasn't going to work, and so then has now apologized. I wonder if that's going to work.
How many other companies do you think are looking into their cybersecurity this week?
Anyone with half a brain, I think, will be looking at it today, because you'd be concerned. There's going to be more and more of this happening. It's just the reality of the world we live in these days. Another reality is increased fuel prices, because the fuel excise that the Morrison government brought in to try and curb cost of living pressures will expire tomorrow.
Yep.
And we're already seeing petrol companies hike the prices.
Yes. So we've seen Caltex Woolworths hike the prices in Perth by more than 20 cents a litre. Coles Express by up to 44 cents a litre.
Bloody
jump.
Rotters.
On yesterday. So the average across Perth has jumped almost 10 cents on yesterday. Fuel Watch is saying, look, these retailers aren't taking advantage of the excise cut ending tonight. It's just all part of the cycle. They're talking, though, that we could get over the $2 mark at some stage in October at the next high point. The prices, for some reason, seem to be a lot more expensive over east at the moment than they are here.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on over there. But it's going to be interesting
around $1.90
so
over there.
If prices do hit around $2 next month, like it's going to be around the same time that the Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, hands down his first budget, and there'll be so much pressure on the government to deal with some of this cost of living stuff, because you've got rate rises, petrol price increases, rental crisis, all of this stuff, and not to mention fruit and vegetables and things like that. So much putting pressure on household incomes at the moment, and we'll wait and see if the government's going to do anything about it.
$15 extra by that. Let's say you fill up your car once a week, $15 a week, like over the course of a year, you're talking like more than $700.
Is it even cheaper if you could catch the train or bus into work a day? Would that even be cheaper? I don't know if you would say $15.
I mean, well, $15 is the increase. Increase, but the problem in Perth is, I mean, you can't get a train to work. No, I can't get a train to work.
Exactly.
So
we got one of those e-scooters, one of those deadly e-scooters.
Yes.
No, I don't think so. We'll have to wait and see. Certainly be looking at the petrol prices around town very closely to see if there's some price gouging going on. I wouldn't hold my breath to say there's not going to be. Maddie, thanks for joining us in the studio today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
We'll do.
You're listening to The West Live.
The McGowan government will unveil new laws today in the latest attempt to stop violence resulting in deaths and life-changing injuries that have marred popular night spots around town. Joining me now to explain is State Political Editor at The West Australian, Peter Law. G'day, Pete.
Morning, Ben.
And so what is the government proposing?
They are proposing to introduce legislation next month that will create what they are calling Protected Entertainment Precincts, or PEPs. And now these have been inspired by the tragic death of Giuseppe, whose nickname was Pep, so you can see the link there. His widow, essentially, for the past 2 years has been pushing for a tough crackdown to try and stamp out horrible violence that blights our popular entertainment precincts, particularly Northbridge. Now, the government have taken up one of her ideas to her credit, and that is that people who are convicted of heinous, violent or sexual crimes in these precincts, once they've done their time and they're released from prison, they'll be banned from these precincts for 5 years. Now, interestingly, we've today learned that these precincts initially will be Perth CBD and Northbridge, Fremantle, Hillarys, Scarborough and Mandurah. And the government have said they'll wait and see how it operates, how well it goes, and it'll be easy to add more precincts in future.
Yeah, they seem to certainly be the hotspots that we've seen over the last couple of years, because there's been several incidents that have made the news, of course. The Pepe that you talk about, Danny Hodgson, who was cowed punched and left fighting for life. And now both of those incidents were unprovoked. What has Enza Rarko come out and said in the wake of this announcement from the government?
She's absolutely welcomed it. She says it's going to mean that her late husband's death was not in vain. It's exactly what she's been pushing for. And I think she's hoping for exactly the same thing as the government and the rest of us, which is that Northbridge or Fremantle or Scarborough is not a place that you avoid because you're scared of it in the evenings, but it's somewhere that's actually safe to go and have a good time, even safe for families to go and enjoy a meal in a restaurant. That seems to be everyone's on the same unity ticket there. So that's certainly what everyone's hoping to achieve. Now, how successful it will be in operational, that's really going to come down to the police. They're going to have to be on the lookout for these people who are automatically hit with these bans. And interestingly, there's going to be a data sharing arrangement with nightclubs. As we know, they have these kind of ID scanner technology. Not only now will the nightclubs have their own list of banned people, they'll now have access to the government's list of banned troublemakers as well. Now, essentially there's two type of exclusion orders that are going to be created with this legislation. The first one is one that's going to be automatically slapped on the worst offenders once they're released from prison for the worst type of crimes that you can imagine. The second, interestingly, is one that police officers can apply to individuals, including juveniles, for something as, you'd say, low-level as antisocial behaviour or threatening behaviour. And that can be for 6 months, and they can apply for it to be extended for 2 years. Now, that's arguably going to be the more controversial aspect of this, that we could potentially have police officers banning youths who are troublemaking in the city from coming back to the city.
Yeah, I think that is certainly going to be interesting to see how that legislation is applied in real life, and also how it's going to be enforced after a ban is placed on somebody, especially a juvenile who might not be entering the nightclubs with the ID scanners. We'll wait and see how that unfolds. I guess, you know, when it comes to this legislation, do you anticipate it'll move through Parliament pretty easily? Like, the government obviously has a supermajority, but will the opposition put up much opposition to it?
I think we'll find that out today. I think it's hard for an opposition to object when we're talking about trying to make cracking down on crime. The government describing it as a zero-tolerance approach. And, I mean, we've seen numerous attempts over the years, haven't we, to try and clean up Northbridge. And it seems to ebb and flow. So, you know, we've seen curfews in the past, they come and go. You see mandatory minimum sentencing for coward punch attacks. And this is the government's latest attack. I would be amazed if the opposition would have put up much of a fight over it, so to speak. But it'd be interesting to see what the mayors of these local precincts have to say as well, and indeed the local business owners. Frankly, I would have thought they'll probably welcome it, because I'm sure it's much better for business to have a thriving nighttime economy that's welcoming for all, rather than one that people are potentially avoiding because they're worried about getting king hit by some coward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a pretty welcome piece of legislation in the eyes of the electorate. As we said, remains to be seen how it's going to be enforced, and maybe won't stop those unprovoked attacks, which anytime there's idiots and alcohol, always a chance of that happening. But if we keep some of those idiots from ever returning to those precincts, it's certainly for a longer period of time, then I think everyone's safer for it. State political editor at The West Australian, Peter Law, thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thanks, Ben.
The cost of living crisis has hit a lot of us where it hurts, at the petrol pump, in the grocery store, and in our bills. But rising costs could also hit where it actually hurts, because a new report has revealed the future of going to the GP could be in strife. Joining me now to explain is the Royal Australian College of GPs President, Adjunct Professor Karen Price. Dr. Price, welcome to The West Live.
Welcome, thank you.
And so, what is the situation with GPs at the moment?
Look, there's a big sustainability issue for GPs. The funding hasn't kept pace with the cost of delivering a high-quality service. The GPs are burned out with the challenges of trying to provide care for very vulnerable patients. There's a lot of administrative and compliance burden. We're being a bit harassed by some of the regulatory agencies. And the remuneration has just not kept pace with the cost. So we've got a lot of challenge with the workloads of increased complexity in our patient presentations and a Medicare that was designed 50 years ago.
And so in the college's new report, General Practice Health of the Nation 2022, there's been some interesting findings. The one that jumped out at me right off the top is that less than 14% of future doctors are choosing general practice as their career.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I mean, Minister Butler suggested he was terrified at when it was 15.2%, and it's gone down again. It needs to be at a target of 50% to have a sustainable workflow into general practice. Clearly, the medical students are looking at their HECSTET and looking at what you earn in general practice and going, well, I'm having none of that.
There's a couple of things going on here, isn't there? Like, there's the economic side, and then there's also what they're experiencing in the workplace. Let's just focus on the economic side initially. So why are the costs going up in general practice?
Well, we've had inflation of at least 5 to 6% lately, and Medicare has been frozen for nearly 10 years and not indexed sufficiently. So when it was first brought out, there was a good indexation, but that indexation formula has changed and it's gradually just dropped and dropped and dropped, and there's a huge gap in what the CPI has been compared to how the Medicare rebate has kept pace. And let's just say that the Medicare rebate is the patient's insurance. That's what the government provides back to people as part of their taxes to pay for primary care. Now, that insurance has not kept pace. Now, if you had any other insurance company doing that to you, you'd be starting to complain. And we're saying, well, we can't cover that cost anymore. And what we're concerned about is that vulnerable patients, those who can't afford a gap, are going to miss out on access to care. And the OECD stats have shown that Australia has great outcomes in terms of quality standards for general practice, but we have a falling ability to access that care.
And I think people in the general public might look at this issue and think, oh, you know, rich doctors, they're on the golf course, they're driving around in their Porsches. They'll think nothing about scrapping bulk billing. But what is it actually like for GPs when they're considering whether to increase prices for patients?
No, we face a lot of challenge in that. I mean, the choice at the moment is keeping the doors open or closing them. You know, 70% of practice owners are worried about their long-term practice sustainability, and 50% of doctors, which includes the contractors, think it's financially unsustainable to keep working, and so they're leaving, they're voting with their feet. So, you know, we're not really on the golf course, we're actually trying to see patients, and we're trying to see them and do a good job. That's what we're trained to do. You don't give away 12 years of hard slog of education to walk away from a career, not easily. So there's something very serious going on with the lack of support from the government to general practice care.
Well, certainly reading this report, it sounds like there is no time for the golf course, because the workload of GPs seems to be going through the roof at a time when they're getting less income than ever before. So what can you tell me about what it's like for GPs at the moment working at the coalface on the front line of the health system?
Oh, I'm really worried. The doctors who are in the mid part of their careers, particularly female doctors, are saying, well, the complex care, the mental health care, aged care, disability, these are the sorts of presentations that we are really dedicated to, but we're not able to do it. We're just not able to keep up with the demand. We're not able to keep up with the financial needs of paying our insurances and everything else that is required to be a doctor and keep going. So we're feeling undervalued, feeling overworked and unappreciated by the government for the sort of level of quality care that we're doing. And doctors are looking around for other ways to earn income. They're leaving the profession but not leaving the employment market. They're going elsewhere because they've got a fabulous degree and fabulous experience, and they can. So when older doctors who are, you know, the gentlemen GPs often of our profession are looking at hanging up their stethoscopes a lot earlier than they otherwise would have, you know, it's a problem. 70% of GPs are really satisfied with their job, love seeing patients, but are feeling that it's just not sustainable anymore.
And in your opinion, what happens to the health system if general practice really starts to struggle to retain doctors?
Well, we've already seen what's happened to emergency departments and hospitals. GPs practice preventative care. We often stop things from happening, so it's hard to measure, but we certainly know overall the statistics are very much in our favour. The World Health Organisation has recommended that any high-functioning health system must invest in primary care, because that's when you get the best bang for buck. We stop things from happening. We stop the utilisation of hospital and EDs. And the country can't afford to keep building hospitals and keep having EDs as a form of proxy general practice, because that's $500 a visit at least, and that's going to be going nowhere fast in terms of taxation. So, you know, the World Health Organization says this is the best way to fund a health system. It's the bedrock of any good health system, and all of the international evidence speaks to that.
Do you think that state governments around Australia take GPs for granted?
I think there has been quite a degree of all governments taking GPs for granted. They've relied on our altruism, our commitment to our craft and our commitment to our patients, whom we see over a lot, many, many years. And we've just kept going and shouldering that burden. And whilst the costs have gone up, GPs themselves have just absorbed that but can no longer do so. And, you know, the younger doctors are having a look at that with their HECS debt from 10 or 12 years of education and going, well, no, I can't do that. I'm 30. I need to buy a house. I need to get on with my life. So, you know, we've got a big problem when we're not appreciated or we're taken for granted.
And so what would you like to see from governments around Australia, federal and state, to try and fix this problem?
Well, we do need to have one health system, so I'm pretty sick and tired of seeing health kicked around between the different political jurisdictions. I know I want to see a big commitment from both the areas of government to the health system as one health system, and I want to see longer complex consultations being given the same weight as a short, very quick consultation in the immediate term. We need to see much less red tape because the compliance around Medicare billing and the Medicare complexity has reduced doctors' time with patients. We spend time trying to work out whether we're going to be pinged by the regulatory officials rather than seeing patients, and all of those things are contributing to doctors just walking away saying it's just too hard.
Yeah, doctors help keep us healthy, but if we want to keep the health system healthy, I think looking after our GPs is a great place to start. Royal Australian College of GPs President, Adjunct Professor Karen Price, thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thanks so much.
The Wild West.
Joining me now in the studio is Westlife producer Kate Ryan. G'day, Kate.
Good morning.
It's all a bit of a letdown after yesterday, like the asteroid impact. Like I said, no. I said it's going to be hard to top it, and it was.
Yeah, it's hard to top, you know,
I watched
space
it again.
Collisions
I watched
going
it again
on.
Last night before I went to bed. It's just amazing. Like, yeah. It's still such an incredible achievement. And today, unfortunately, it was back down to Earth with our feet very firmly planted on the ground, talking about the GP crisis and thugs in our nightlife precincts. That's real life, though. That's real life, folks.
Life, you know, real life news. Sad, boring stuff. Well, it's not boring, but, you know, sad stuff.
Yeah, sad stuff.
Not exciting interplanetary things.
And now this is a sad story this week that that broke on Sunday. There was a woman in Melbourne at the show there who'd been hit by a roller coaster, a shocking accident, and we've been trying to learn more about it ever since. What's the latest twist?
Yeah, so there's a few latest going on with that. So this young woman, Shyla Rodden, she still remains in a coma in hospital. She's suffering from a brain injury, broken ribs, broken legs, broken feet, even broken arms. It's really horrible. And it had been revealed by her family that she had only lost her brother a couple of weeks ago before the accident. So it's just another hurdle, another tragedy for the family. The show, the ride she was struck by has actually since reopened and has been deemed safe for the public, which Shyla's family have basically said they shouldn't be doing that. They're appalled by it, are their words. They're a bit shocked that they're reopening this ride, especially when she's still fighting for life in hospital.
It's just such a sad case, isn't it?
It is. And, yeah, investigators have been looking at CCTV and all that kind of stuff, and it is believed that she went to retrieve her phone and then was struck by the...
It's just absolutely horrible. And look, before we move on to other things in Wild West, I want to just spend a little bit of time going off script and talk about a penalty that was handed down to that Perth babysitter who was convicted of sexual abuse of children who he was hired to care for. So he advertised his services. This is Jareth Harries Markham, a 24-year-old who was in the Supreme Court on Tuesday. And so as a parent, this is something that really struck home to me because, you know, sometimes you might have to go out to an event, you might have something on, and so you look online for a babysitter and you think that they've got all the right qualifications and you put your trust in that person to look after your children. And then this I don't even have a word to describe this absolute scumbag, has gained the trust of the parents mm-hmm. and the families and then abused the children. And you know it's bad when the prosecutor, Brett Tooker, he actually became emotional when he was reading out the extent of the abuse in court. And this is a seasoned prosecutor who deals with horrible crimes on a daily basis, and he could barely kind of keep hold of his emotion. And so now Harry's Markham has been sentenced to 18 years behind bars. Not enough, I reckon.
I don't think so either. This is 12 families have been impacted by it, and the victims were aged between 8 months and 9 years old. These are their babies and their children. And
their childhood's taken away by this monster. 18 years doesn't even come close to the impact that his actions will be felt on these families, on these children. And he's going to serve at least 16 of them behind bars before he has any chance of parole. And lifetime restraining orders were also made so he can't contact the victims. I hope he has an absolute terrible time behind bars, because that's what he's inflicted on all these families. Mm-hmm. And now let's move on to lighter things, because the Wild West, that's what we normally do. And this is an interesting one. So Rolling Stone magazine has revealed its top 100 TV shows of all time.
Yes,
and
they have.
The top show probably won't come as a surprise.
Yes. If anyone, I don't know, keeps up with their TV shows and what constantly rates as the number one, it is Sopranos.
Yeah.
Always.
Always.
Some of the other ones might be surprising. And I will say a little disclaimer. The panel that judged this came mostly from American actors and producers and things. So a lot of the shows are American, most of them, and only a couple are British, and then that's about it.
And some actors as well, like John Hamm and Carrie Coon and Ben Stiller. And so let's run through the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we know what number one is, but we'll start with number 10 is the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Oh, yeah, that goes back a while. And this is of all time, TV shows of all time.
Yes,
that's a classic.
Of all time.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Number 9 is Atlanta.
Ooh, nice.
I haven't seen that one. Number 8 is Cheers.
Cheers, classic.
Yep. It's Cheers. It's, I don't know, the reruns maybe have ruined it a little bit, when they do with Everybody Loves Raymond and stuff. The reruns just play all the time.
Cheers
God.
Was definitely one of those shows.
Yep. Number 7 is Mad Men.
Yeah, classic.
6, Seinfeld.
Classic.
And now into the top 5. Number 5 is Fleabag.
Fleabag higher than Seinfeld.
I loved Fleabag.
Fleabag's a great show. Yeah.
Seinfeld, I know a lot of people love it, controversially.
You couldn't get into it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just played too much. Yeah. Same thing as Cheers. Number 4 is The Wire.
Classic crime show.
Yeah.
It's starring Idris Elba.
Definitely. Number 3, Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that no surprise that's in the top 3.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, I can already guess what it is. If you haven't already mentioned in the top 10, I'm guessing it's a long-running animated series where all the people in the show are yellow.
Yes, you are correct. It's The Simpsons.
The Simpsons, wow. Sopranos, The Simpsons and Breaking Bad in the top 3, and The Wire as well. I don't think anyone would argue about that top 4. Fleabag, no. Seinfeld, bit of conversation to have there.
Yeah.
And now I know what people will be thinking. Some people listening will go, well, hang on a minute, what about Friends?
Yeah.
But I'm just scrolling down. It didn't even make it into the top 30.
Wow.
How about that? That's controversial.
Yeah. So number 100 was What We Do in the Shadows. So I did say there was only British and American. So this is New Zealand. So, And then number 50, we'll just go with the big milestone ones, I suppose. I've got to keep scrolling down. So Russian Doll made into it, which I think
interesting.
It's not number 50, it was 57.
100 shows of all time, Russian Doll.
Yeah. The Office UK was 53. 52, Barry. Never heard of it.
That's a HBO show about a contract killer who becomes an actor in Los Angeles. Quite funny.
51, X-Files.
Yeah. Nice.
And number 50, which they've just made me scroll down. Number 50, Jeopardy.
Jeopardy.
Yeah.
The thing is, there's so many great shows. It must be hard to narrow it down. And there's some recency bias when it comes to these sort of lists.
Yeah.
And some kind of like shows like Atlanta. Not that Atlanta isn't a great show that's won heaps of awards, but in the top 10 of all time, to me, seems a bit recency bias.
Yeah. I feel like it's, you know, when, Game of Thrones made 31.
Yeah. That's controversial in itself, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it was probably marked down for its final season, the finale in particular. Succession, which a lot of people love at the moment, made it in at number 11.
Wow.
So that's very high. Veep, number 13. Again, mm-hmm. The Americans, that's, I don't know about The Americans at number 14. Give me a break. Before Twin Peaks?
Number 20 is 30 Rock.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I just think, you know, when critics judge other shows, like, you can kind of get a little bit like too niche. It's not what the public like, it's what they think is
like
is
Watchmen,
a good show.
Watchmen, which I think is a great show, but the 23rd greatest TV show of all time, give me a break.
Yeah, I think
the top three, no argument. The rest of it, very much lots of arguments.
Yeah, leave something to be desired, I suppose.
And now this is something that has more drama than any TV show. Mm-hmm. A live interview that was interrupted in pretty incredible fashion.
Mm-hmm. Let's have a listen.
We're coming unstuck a bit.
Yeah. I think Claire Wheeler has been talking about it. I have no idea what has gone on there.
Are you okay?
And I really hope Alicia is okay.
So what the heck did we just listen to?
So this was former Matilda star Alicia Canavas, who was speaking on SEN on Tuesday night, and she was carjacked.
On air. That's what the screams were.
Yes.
The screams were her being carjacked while in the middle of an interview.
Yep. So an alleged attempted carjacking, but still, it's still terrifying, as her blood-curdling screams can attest to. She, like, even the host said, that's probably the scariest moment in my broadcasting career. Imagine being on the other line hearing that. I mean, that was the first time.
They handled it pretty well.
Yeah, and just going, what's going on?
Oh my gosh! And so, how is she? Was she okay?
She's okay. They didn't end up hijacking her car. She got out of the situation and is okay. But, I mean, just traumatized, I would say.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is something that you definitely do not hear every day. I'm glad she's okay. What a fascinating thing to listen to. And it's like, you can imagine, just really, if you have no idea what a carjacking is actually like, I think now we have a little bit of an idea what it must be like. Like, as you say, those blood-curdling screams, gosh.
And being on both ends, like, you know, just having a conversation, then randomly hearing screams and not knowing what to do.
Mm.
But then also, you know, as we know, when you're talking on air, I mean, even if I've done, you know, radio live crosses and things, you're concentrating. So you're kind of not really paying attention to your surroundings.
Yeah. Exactly.
And she probably was in her car, you know, trying to not have all the background noise. And
then someone's tried to pull her out of the car. Oh, my gosh. Dearie me, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing audio. Kate Ryan, thanks for joining us in the studio today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Talk tomorrow.
Well, that's it from me today. Thanks for your company, folks. We'll be back tomorrow live from 8:45 a.m. Don't forget to subscribe to The West Live on your favourite podcast player and give us a rating and a review while you're at it, because it really helps us out.
You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.